This is an ABC podcast. This is Rhianna Patrick on ABC Radio.
If you read romance, then you'll be acutely aware of the perception that those who don't read it have about the genre and its readership. And the same goes for adults who read and enjoy young adult fiction. But for every book genre or category, there are authors who are writing for a reader who might seem like they're the niche within the niche. Scottish crime writer Val McDermid recently picked her top 10 list of Britain's queer and trans authors and poets for The Guardian. In her article, she wrote, "Every literary movement requires pioneers to kick open the door. A crack. Others spot the opening and push the door wider. Then at last, there's room for everyone to walk through and write the lives they want to write." Now, in terms of where LGBTQI authors and stories are now in the literary world, she went on to write, "For so long conspicuous by our absence, we are now conspicuous by our presence. Queer fiction isn't new, but it's definitely a world that I know little about. So I've called on two authors who know this area extremely well." Kevin Clare is a Sydney-based author who's written several books. Hi, Kevin.
Hi, Rhianna. What a lovely opening. I love you.
Thank you. And Rebecca Langham is an author based in the Blue Mountains west of Sydney who has written two books and a popular novella. Thanks for joining me, Rebecca.
Oh, thanks so much for having us both here.
Now, Kevin, how long ago did you start your writing journey? I mean, how did this start for you?
That's, you know, a bloody long time ago. My first novel, Drama Queens with Love Scenes, I probably started writing in the middle of the last decade. It first came out earlier this decade with its initial publisher, but in between, you know, work and finding time to write it and having it sit down and, you know, eventually working on 8 different drafts of it, it took me probably a lot longer than the books I write now.
So it was a fair whack of a journey for you then?
It was a fair whack of a journey. In fact, at the time when I started writing it, I wanted to write a story based on my partner and I. I've been with my partner for nearly 3 decades, and I made us the main characters. And after I had it assessed, my assessor told me it needed more drama. So the character based on my now husband runs off with a talentless playwright at the end of the first chapter. So it became a book about unrequited love, quite different to Warren and myself.
Oh, well, Rebecca, for you, I mean, when did the writing floodgates really open up for you?
Well, like a lot of writers, I've been doing it for a really long time, since I was a little kid. I used to write stories for my niece and my friends and that sort of thing. But I'm an English and history teacher, and for the first 8 years of my career, I taught a lot of English. And then I got a job teaching just history. And this funny thing happened. When I didn't have to teach other people how to write or read lots of teenage fiction and teach people how to analyze teenage fiction, suddenly I started reading stuff that I wanted to read and writing stuff that I wanted to write. So that was probably about 5 or 6 years ago. And since then, I've been writing about a book per year. It takes me a while because life is busy, but yeah, about 5 or 6 years.
So for you, Rebecca, I mean, did you find that was the big difference, that because you were teaching English, for you, you just, there was something stopping you, some weird kind of mind block that you were having, writer's block?
Yeah, I don't know exactly why that is, because you're so immersed in literature when you're teaching English, but maybe too immersed. I don't know. Maybe you do so much analysis of other people's stories and spend so much time breaking down books that are written for adolescents. It just perhaps drains all the creative energy. But when I switched to teaching only history, something definitely became unplugged, and I was able to actually sit down and get all the ideas that had been festering in my brain for a long time out and actually write them.
Now, Kevin, you mentioned that your Actors and Angels series, which was your first 3 books that you wrote, were loosely based around your relationship with your now husband. But what is it about the stories with queer characters that you really wanted to explore as an author in the types of work that you create?
I think for me, and I think for a lot of us who write queer fiction, we want to see ourselves in mainstream books and genres apart from, some is romance, some is erotica, but there's a lot of science fiction and fantasy. And for my now husband and I wanted to take us on a journey in the afterlife through the theatre district and see what would come of it. So basically I was working with two characters I knew very well in three books that I could explore. And the interesting thing is, in the first two books, there's elements of us and our relationship. But in the last book, Drama Queens and Devilish Schemes, it's not based on us at all, or it's based on us, but nothing in our real relationship, because by the last book, our relationship, or the main character's relationships, is pretty much on the rocks.
Yeah, you don't want that in your own marriage, do you, Kevin?
No, definitely. And none of what happens in the third book is actually true to life.
Okay. So, Rebecca, in terms of how you describe your work, I mean, Kevin, I'm guessing that yours is, you're sort of in the romance realm, but you're starting to move out of that a little bit?
Well, I wouldn't call The Actors and Angels romance. It's more magic realism. And to give you an example of what you find, in Drama Queens and Devilish Schemes, because their relationship is on the rocks, Guy, the angels, takes them to the Valley of Lost Loves, where they hear echoes of arguments they actually had when they were alive, because their relationship started getting on the rocks while they were alive. So they get the chance to re-examine their relationship and talk about it. So as far as proper romance, the only thing I've sort of written anything close to proper romance is Nate and the New Yorker and Nate's Last Tango. And because it doesn't always fit well with some of the romance purists, as I found through the reviews,
So it's been a learning curve as well.
Oh, it's been a learning curve as well. Because I wanted to write Nate in the New Yorker because I wanted to write something more commercial for my last publisher and try to write romance. So I binged on Sex and the City leading up to it, trying to get an understanding of what romance should feel like. So I also picked some tropes, but I focused on a main character who was trying to learn to love second best. He already had the love of his life. And so he was trying to deal with this wonderful guy, but he wasn't ready to fall in love. So when it came out, I had wonderful reviews, like, this is possibly the best novella length story I have ever read. But the romance purists would write things like, no, just no, or there is a certain suspension of disbelief that happens in a romance novel, but Nate and the New Yorker by Kevin Clare stretched that till it snapped. So I did divide the romance purists on those books.
Kevin, you've done the thing that authors shouldn't do and read the reviews.
We're addicted. We're all secretly addicted. Anyone who tells you otherwise is lying.
Oh, well, Rebecca, I mean, for you, if Kevi's work is kind of magic realism in a way, how do you describe what your novels are under what you're writing in terms of queer fiction and that umbrella, that very broad umbrella?
Oh, could I just call them really nerdy? That's probably yep. Not quite clear enough. Speculative fiction, absolutely, which magical realism is speculative fiction as well. But I love science fiction and fantasy, sort of soft sci-fi, though, not what you'd call hard sci-fi, which is, for the real scientists out there. Soft sci-fi is more political and socially themed. And the science aspects are there to really explore the social aspects of humanity, questions about who are humans, what makes us who we are, how much should we let science interfere with what humanity is and how it operates, those sorts of questions. And I also just love a bit of classical fantasy, dragons and warlocks and witches and all that cool fun stuff.
Now, Rebecca, for you, I mean, is this something that you thought a lot about before you went looking for a publisher to pitch the book that ended up becoming your first book? I mean, what went into that search?
Yeah. So my first novel, Beneath the Surface, which is book one in a duology, it's a science fiction novel, like a dystopian story. And the characters are quite diverse. I've got lesbian characters, gay characters, hetero, pansexual, gender swapping characters in there. But it's not a book about sexuality. It's a science fiction story with a diverse cast. And it's a little bit tricky because you tend to have publishers that want science fiction that's fairly formulaic, i.e. heterosexual, male-female romantic subplot. And then you have queer publishers who are looking for diverse characters, but generally they want it to be more romantic. So even a lot of the science fiction that's published by what boutique LGBTI plus sort of companies, they often want a science fiction backdrop, but really it's still a romance. And my book's not a romance. Like, you know, there's a little bit of love in there because we all like a nice romantic subplot, I think. But it's definitely not a romance story. That's very much secondary to the science fiction themes. So it was a bit tricky. It didn't really fit for either of those categories of publishers.
And so when you had, you know, you kind of knew that, Rebecca, what went into that search when you were like, okay, I've got this draft or this manuscript to where I need it. I think I'm ready to pitch it. What went into that work when you started to look for publishers?
A lot of research. I'm such a historian. I just did a lot of research. So I basically went through a lot of different publishers, looking at their mission statements, looking at the titles they published, trying to get a feel for what they printed. Gradually, you know, sort of whittled it down. And I got to a point where I had a short list. And so I started reading things that they printed, trying to see if anything was like Beneath the Surface, if it had that science fiction dystopian feel about it, and the genre came before the romance. And eventually I got down to a couple of publishers, and the one that ended up number one on my list was Nine Star Press, an American publisher. I did really want an Australian publisher, but I couldn't find one that seemed to be interested in printing the things that we write. And I sent it off to Nine Star, and I was really lucky. Within about 3 months, I had an acceptance. So I didn't go through the whole rejection after rejection thing. It was pretty cool.
Oh, I did.
Now, Kevin, yeah, speaking of that, I mean, Kevin, how did your first full novel, Drama Queens with Love Scenes, get published? That was a bit of a journey.
That was a long journey. I finally got, after probably about a year, a publisher, a small Boston publisher, who didn't have the pleasure of giving me a rejection letter, but and when it was going to be, when they sent me, you know, we'd love to publish this, would you be interested? You know, I was sitting by myself in front of the laptop on a Sunday night alone going, I won't say exactly what I said, but basically there was a, yeah. Now, but the interesting thing is, because this wasn't particularly, it wasn't a queer publisher, when it came time to work with the editor, I got a very curt email from the editor-in-chief of this publisher saying, you call this an erotic novel? If you don't ramp up the sex, this book will never see the light of day. And I'm looking, thinking, my God, but it's not an erotic novel. It's a tale of two of unrequited love in the theatre district of the afterlife. How did someone think it was an erotic novel? So they gave me a really brilliant editor who wrote erotic stories, but she was a brilliant editor regardless, and she wanted me to put in three sex scenes, and I pushed back because it's like, well, that's not what this book is. Just because you're a non-gay publisher, don't think that our stories have to be coming out stories or erotica or whatever. This is about unrequited love. In the end, because it was my first publishing contract, I caved in, put in three very short, probably three paragraph sex scenes that really don't belong or move the story forward. And now that the book is with Nine Star Press, I was thinking of unstitching those scenes out. But one of those scenes leads to a newer comedy scene that wasn't originally in there. So I couldn't take that comedy scene out because the Actors and Angels series are essentially comedy. So any point that I can make the audience laugh, the reader laugh, I just had to keep in.
So you've got a sex scene that makes people laugh.
Well, look, even a even a friend of mine who read the book recently sort of said, you know, those sex scenes, but you're right, those sex scenes don't need to be there. It's like, no, but they're in there now and I just have to live with it.
Yeah, so Kevin, on that, I mean, when it comes to queer fiction and those who don't read it, I mean, are there perceptions about what it is? I mean, is that part of it?
Yeah, and we even find, like I said before, because we're writing it because we want to see queer characters in other more mainstream genres, your detective novel, and you know, that's been done before, but it's been done so much more now. I think one thing as writers we get frustrated about is good old Goodreads, when people give you one less star because there isn't a sex scene in your book, and you think, why don't you critique me for what the book is rather than critiquing it for what I didn't intend to do? And it's really frustrating from that point of view.
Now, Rebecca, I mean, Kevin's touched on a few points there about those perceptions and those stereotypes. And are those assumptions as well something that you've come up against in your writing?
Yeah, at times it does get a little bit frustrating because, like I said before, a lot of the science fiction and fantasy that's out there with lesbian characters or bisexual women, they are romances and they happen to be set in space or in the future. You know, it's lesbians in space is very popular, although, you know, why not? But that's definitely not what mine is. It's sci-fi before romance, and it does mean that sometimes people pick it up and they just, even if they don't realise that they're expecting more romance and they don't get that, so then there's disappointment. But then at the same time, there are plenty of readers who are like me and want to see something that is science fiction or fantasy that happens to have gender and sexual diversity in it, where that's not the story, the love story isn't the centre, coming out isn't the focus. They're just there doing their thing in the future, in the dystopian world, just like everybody else.
And Rebecca, is sci-fi fantasy kind of where you sat when you were a reader growing up?
Oh, for sure. I think I've come to sci-fi more as I've gotten older. I think fantasy definitely lends itself more to childhood reading habits than sci-fi does. Most of the things I love about science fiction are its intelligence, the very interesting questions that it asks and sometimes answers, or sometimes just leaves you asking more questions. But yeah, in terms of television, movies, books, I've always loved speculative fiction.
And so, Kevy, for you, I mean, having you were talking before about sort of your first hand at romance and having those comments and really polarising the audience,
yes,
particularly in those reviews that you read, but what did you take away from that? I mean, how do you move through that negativity in a way?
Look, I kind of realise I'm not going to try to write a romance again. And that's not a harsh thing, because I like working with magic realism and looking at real-life situations in a surrealistic way. And more recently, my last book was a dystopian novel about a future society addicted to social media, and looking at the perils of social media and, you know, what our society could become. So and other works in progress more magic realism about relationships. So I've kind of learnt that because I don't really read romance, and those romance readers are so distinct in what things should be, like even with one of the negative reviews, they really blasted me for putting a twist in Nate and the New Yorker that shouldn't be in a romance. That's not what you put in a romance. And they talk about this spoiler the whole time in their review. So I just now think I might step away from romance because I really don't read it. I know it's strict, so let's just stay with what I know.
But that's, I mean, as a writer, you have to test those boundaries, though, don't you? I mean, Rebecca, have you found that? Have you gone outside of your sci-fi writing in a way?
Absolutely. I've dabbled in romance.
You've dabbled.
Yeah.
But you've done well at it.
Experimented a little bit. I actually wrote a little fantasy romance novella that, Finding Aurora, that's just turned out to be my most popular book, and I love it because it's so sweet. But that was quite short. But I've actually tried writing a traditional contemporary romance novel, my first one. I finished it about 6 weeks ago. And I'm horrified to say I think it's probably the best thing I've ever written.
Oh.
I'm very shocked. Yeah, but it's probably because I'm hoping that my technical skills improving as time goes on. But it is all romance. It's got lots of tropes and angst, and there's one of those scenes in there that I avoided writing for so long. And
an erotic scene?
Yeah, yeah.
I hate writing erotic.
Horrible.
Oh, it's hard.
It was horrible.
It is hard.
Well, maybe in your books it is, but not in mine.
Oh, okay.
Oh.
I'm just going to make this point quickly. Writing a sex scene when both characters are the same sex, you've got
difficult.
Only so many words for parts that you can use.
It's so true.
It's not doubled up if it's two different sexes.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. I embarrassed myself. My partner was giggling at me so bad because I was like, I can't think of another verb to use here.
Now, Kevin, when it comes to your readership and your audience, I mean, who are you writing your books for?
I don't think about who I'm writing my books for, but my audience seems to be women and older gay men. And just to expand on that, with my dystopian tale, Social Media Central, the main character isn't gay, and there's a lovely old man who's reviewed all the Actors and Angels series, and he loves them. So I thought I'd ask him to be my beta reader for Social Media Central, which he accepted. But once he read the first three chapters and realised the main character, a male named Taylor, was about to start an affair with famous fashion blogger Madeline Q, he politely came back to me and refused. And for his reasoning, he said, look, I'm, you know, in my 60s. All through my life, I've been reading mainstream books with straight characters. There's so much good writing with gay male characters now. That's what I'd like to focus on, you know, in my twilight years. And I respected that. But I do know, like, surprisingly, most of my books seem to appeal to women and older gay men.
That's interesting, Kevin. I mean, and you can understand where that reader was coming from in a way. I mean, I'm gathering that at the time when he was younger, there might not have been a lot of this available for him to read.
Yeah, and the other thing that's also interesting to note, in a more recent review of Drama Queens with Love Scenes that was reviewed by an American person, he said that it's nice to read a book where people just are queer. They're not dealing with their sexuality. They're not dealing with internalized homophobia or whatever. And I think that's one thing that we take for granted in Australia when we're writing for things that may be read for an American audience, because they've got, you know, the scary Christianity thing that hangs over their heads and permeates their society, which a lot of us other Western societies don't have. So we don't think of ourselves as, you know, maybe the victim or trying to deal with sexuality, because, you know, some of us have had an easy trip in that regard.
Yeah, and so that must give a different perspective too, Kevin, when you're writing this, just wondering who's going to give you feedback as well with the stories and the characters.
Yes. One thing I'll say, when Drama Queens with Love Scenes came out, I was already well into the sequel, Drama Queens and Adult Themes. Now, when the reviews started coming out, a lot of people fell in love with my insecure angel character, Guy, who befriends Alan in the novel because, you know, his best friend has run off with a talentless playwright, Pedro, and that's where Alan yearns for Warwick, his friend. But when that came out, like someone said, Guy the Angel is the emotional linchpin of the book, and one blogger, even in a blog, said, I put in a request for my own personal Guy as my guardian angel. The problem was, because I was well into Drama Queens and Adult Themes, I didn't put Guy in that book.
Oh.
And all of a sudden I realised, oh my God, some serious rewriting had to happen where his importance in that second novel had to have a big role in that second novel and then continues to have a big role in the third novel, and he pops up in other other little stories as well.
So just Guy came out of nowhere in a way in terms of being the fan favourite.
Yeah, and I think the thing that people like about Guy is he is insecure. He actually can't fly. He doesn't know how to fly. He was never taught because he didn't grow up with his parents around. And I think that's why people warm to him, because everyone's had a good friend who shares their wisdom with them. But a good friend is also someone that you share your wisdom with and prop them up. And I think that's why people fell in love with Guy the Angel.
Rebecca, have you had something similar from your readership of, you know, some of the things that Kevin's mentioned in terms of what his readership have been asking him and the ways that they've reacted?
Yeah, so one of the most recent publications I've had, it's a novella. It's a very short story. It's about 20,000 words. I think you could probably sit down and read it in 3 or 4 hours, called Finding Aurora. And it is a retelling of Sleeping Beauty that I just wrote because I just love fairy tales. And it was always meant to be very fluffy, very sweet, very predictable, and, you know, shamelessly adorable. But it was just meant to be, you know, quite brief. And nearly every single review I've gotten for it is, why is this so short? And I just thought, oh, I just wanted this to be a really, really easy read, just like something someone could almost read commuting to work and back in a day, you know. And there's actually been quite a lot of requests for there to be more in that book. And people have actually even suggested, you know, why don't you rewrite this and turn it into a novel? And I don't want to rewrite it. I do actually quite like it the way it is. But because it is just sort of fun and fluffy and flirty, I thought, well, I really enjoyed this. I'll just write another one. And it can be, you know, a little series of, you know, family-friendly, child-friendly, almost Disney-style little fairy tale novellas. So the first one's called Finding Aurora, and the second one, which is only exists in my head at the moment, is going to be called Finding Talia. And it's essentially going to follow a character that's in the first book, and she exists in a different plane, like an alternate kind of universe, which I won't explain too much because it would ruin the ending if anyone wants to read it. But she sort of pops in and out of the story for our main character, and there's a lot I can do with her on the other side of the ethereal veil. So, yeah, I toyed with the idea of writing that back when I finished Finding Aurora, but all these reviews that have been, some of them are so sweet. One woman said that it brought her to tears. She was so happy with the ending, and I cried because she cried. Like, it was the most beautiful review I've ever read. And I just thought, oh, yeah, why not? Let's do another one. It'd be fun.
Now, Rebecca, you mentioned there about finding Aurora and wanting that to be kid-friendly, child-friendly. Why did you want that? I mean, why did you want this to be something that everyone could read?
Well, one of the difficulties, and this is going to be a little bit of a generalisation, but on the whole, a lot of gay fiction is very sexually charged, and I totally understand why that is. You know, when people first started writing in this area, there was so little out there that was affirming of our sexual identities and our lives and the experiences that we had. But there are so many books in that area now. And there are lots of gay retellings of fairy tales, but most of them end up with some very erotic scenes in them. And you know what? I really just wanted something very Disney, something that was just ridiculously cute and sweet, and I really struggled to find anything like that, so I just thought, bugger it, I'll write it myself. And it's something that makes me really happy. I have a daughter who's about to turn 7, and she's really happy that I've written something that she can actually read, because everything else I've read is, you know, a little bit too adult for her, just because of the themes and ideas that are in them. And I just feel like so many kids grow up watching and reading fairy tales and thinking, oh, isn't that beautiful? Look at that lovely happy ending. And the happy endings have always got these two white heterosexual prince and princess characters. And I just think we need to push past that and make it so that our children can see all sorts of sweet, adorable stories that have got all sorts of couples and all sorts of people.
So, Rebecca, you know, in terms of your sci-fi writing, I mean, how hard is it to write sci-fi in terms of who buys your work? I mean, how do you afford to write what you write?
Oh, I don't. I can't afford it. My gosh, no. The sci-fi, the audience is so eclectic. It's you know, sometimes sort of young adult or new adult, as the that sort of emerging area of marketing is coming to be called, there's plenty of people in that sort of 18 to 25 bracket that have a look at it. But men and women seem to come at my science fiction work from different angles. I find that some of the male readers are more interested in the sci-fi parts, and then some of the female readers are interested in different aspects of the book. It just sort of depends. I don't seem to have any one particular group that really likes Beneath the Surface more than any other group, but I'm quite happy about that, actually. I was hoping to write something that wasn't strictly pigeonholed for a particular group of people or a particular gender or sexuality. There's a little bit of everything in there. Even with Finding Aurora, I wouldn't call it a lesbian book. The prince in the story is asexual, and there's actually not a lot of ace representation out there. There's starting to be more and more. And the main character, Talia, she is pansexual. Like, gender just doesn't matter to her. She just likes who she likes, and it's just there. She's got a big crush on the prince, and she's got a big crush on this ghost that's a woman, that, you know, because a ghost and a princess and a prince.
Nice to have choice.
You know, like, it's, yeah, so eclectic readers, because there's eclectic characters, I think.
Well, Rebecca, I mean, on that, you know, with the pressure that you felt from the success, I suppose, of Finding Aurora, do you think, you know, you are going to write the book that's in your head that you mentioned?
Yeah, absolutely. Because I've just finished Nurturing Hope, which is the fantasy novel that I mentioned earlier, that's sort of sitting with a diversity reader at the moment, because there's some kind of political themes in there that have the potential to potentially upset groups, and I don't want to do that. I want to have really positive and affirming diversity in the book. So I've sent it off to an African-American editor who does sensitivity reads to check it for me. I'm currently in anxiety mode, waiting to hear back on that. I'm so, so nervous. I was like, please let this book be okay. I actually really want it to be okay. But when I get that back and I come out of my little emotional pit that I'm in waiting for that at the moment, yeah, the fairy tale book part two, so to speak, that's the next one on the to write list for sure.
Kevin, what have you been working on recently?
I've just signed a contract for an ebook that Nine Star Press will put out at some stage. I haven't started working with the editor yet, but it's called Winter Masquerade, and it's about Ferris, who suddenly wakes up on a cruise ship that's sailing on chocolate, and in the sky there's this rainbow laundry always hanging, and he wants to try to get back to his own world, but every time, because he wants to go back to his boyfriend, but every time he starts talking about his boyfriend, this whole world goes very steampunk and very dark. And one of the characters who's rehearsing to play for the Winter Masquerade Ball tries to kill him every time it's in this dark mode. So my magic realism and exploring relationships and characters is starting to get darker. So I'm looking forward to that one coming out in the future.
Now, Rebecca, you've got a book that is due out later this year, and it's book two in your Outsider project. But what is Breaking the Surface about?
So Breaking the Surface will pick up where Beneath the Surface left off. Essentially, it's a dystopian world where there's a group of refugee aliens that have arrived on the planet seeking asylum, and our future world government has given them asylum, but only in the form of putting them away in underground detention centres where they can live safely, they're protected, you know, nothing bad happens to them as such, but they're just left there and left there and left there. And as time passes, there starts to be a bit of a conspiracy unfurl within our main character's world, where she starts to realise that there's actually a lot of reasons why they were keeping them down there, and lots of lies that have been told to the public about their treatment. And the second book deals with all of those things coming to a climax, all of the characters finding out how much they've been manipulated, just how deep the conspiracies go, and trying to find a way to hold the people who did all of that to them accountable.
Now, Rebecca, tell me a little bit about finding those writers who kind of write like you do. I mean, what was that like, kind of finding that community of writers that you could be a part of?
Oh, the internet can be such a, you know, terrible place at times, quite frankly, but it could also be such a wonderful place. In terms of finding other writers, Twitter hashtags are actually such a fantastic tool. I actually got really frustrated with not being able to find writers that kind of had the same, I suppose, approach to the world that I did. And I started my own hashtag. It's just hashtag OzWrites. And Kevin and I are both very involved in that. And there's lots of Australian writers who have found each other on there. We've also come into contact with a group called Aussie Speculative Fiction, again, via social media, run by this really amazing lady named Alana Andrews. And so now we've got conventions that we're going to as a group. We're helping each other sell books and helping each other out with ideas for covers and blurbs and talking to each other about all sorts of technicalities of printing. And yeah, nearly all of that's happened online and then spilled out into the real world. It's been awesome.
And Kevin, what's it like having someone else kind of not far from you who's also with the same publisher?
You know, it's been wonderful because for many years, because I've had my last publisher was also an American publisher. They folded. They were Wild City Press. So I was pretty much working in the dark in the social media realm, trying to reach out to an overseas market and scheduling tweets overnight to hit prime time in those markets. So to actually have someone who's just up the road, basically, and we've worked together, we've actually gone to Supernova together and sold books there. We went to HubCon in the Blue Mountains and sold books there. It's been great to have Rebecca, like, because I've been doing this for years, as you know, Rihanna, and to actually have someone close here in Australia and start reaching out to Australian readers for a change has been fantastic.
Well, I'd like to thank you, Kevin, and also you, Rebecca, for coming in and chatting a bit about queer fiction. Kevin, I really enjoyed Nate and the New Yorker, so I'm continuing through that novella. Rebecca, I look forward to your second book coming out later this year. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Rihanna.
On ABC Radio, you're with Rihanna Patrick.